Hey mum, what are you watching? Hello and welcome to the ninth episode of our fortnightly podcast. My name is Christine and I'm joined again today by my incredibly insightful and intelligent mum, Linda. Today we're going to talk about new Aussie drama Playing for Keeps. Then we're sharing what we are reading, watching and listening to. And then we're going to talk about aged care. Hey mum, how are you going?
I'm doing well, thank you, but I don't think you should build me up so much in the introduction because people will be disappointed.
But the thing is, people have already been listening for 8 episodes, so they know that about you already.
Okay. They know I'm disappointing.
No, they know you're incredibly insightful and intelligent. And you're on holiday.
I know. And I'm sitting in a motel bathroom doing this call and yes.
Do you want to tell the listeners where you're heading off to tomorrow?
I'm flying into New York. Well, I'm flying into LA and then I'm flying on to New York.
Cool.
And I'm going to be staying in Brooklyn for 11 days.
Are you excited?
Actually, I am getting quite excited. I'm looking forward to the whole process, the whole journey, and being in a strange place, a new place.
Yeah, awesome.
Mm.
Okay, so we'll get started and talk about our first topic, Aussie drama Playing for Keeps. So we left Channel 2 and we went to a commercial station.
Mm.
It was a little bit traumatic.
Was.
But Playing for Keeps is a new Aussie drama, but I think if people had originally watched the Channel 10 ads, they could have very much be excused for thinking it was a comedy. And it centres around the wives and girlfriends of a fictional Melbourne-based footy club. We've both only seen the first episode, but so far it seems as though the show will also go into the lives of the male footy players as well. What did you think of the show, Mum?
Well, I watched it and there's a couple of actors in it that I really enjoy. I enjoyed the young couple. It was light and easy to watch. On reflection, it wasn't just you saying you didn't like it. But on reflection, I suppose it, well, it's a bit sort of shallow, isn't it? This whole thing that you've got yourself a footy player and you've got to do whatever you can to maintain the relationship and it sort of makes you a star.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that though because, I mean, that's in line with what I was thinking. But when I first talked to you a couple of days ago, one of the phrases you actually used to describe the show was that it had depth.
Well, I take that back.
You take it back? You retract that?
Yeah, I retract that.
So the couple the young couple you're referring to, so basically the young boy is a new recruit to this Melbourne footy team and his girlfriend follows him from the country town they used to live in to move to Melbourne to be with him. And they're kind of adjusting to this new, more glamorous life. That young couple, we're not familiar with those actors, are we? Because they weren't familiar to me at all.
Not at all, no.
Probably the most familiar to me was Maddie, who was playing the lawyer.
Yes, I like her.
Yeah, so that's Annie Maynard. Mm. And I know her mostly from Upper Middle Bogan and Puberty Blues.
Yeah.
And I thought she was really good in it. But just to speak to what you were saying about the shallowness of the show, because that's something I really took away from it as well. Just one example of that I was thinking about.
Mm.
So we assume that Maddie is a lawyer. So this is one of the wives of one of the football players who's recently gone into a coaching role. So we assume that Maddie's a lawyer, right?
Well, we assume that just because she was talking about being made partner, but I suppose she could have been made partner of anything, couldn't she?
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like, it's not explicitly stated she's a lawyer, nor does it go into anything about her being a lawyer, except for this constant reference to being made partner.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like she's set up as this incredibly progressive career woman stereotype, but in a completely superficial way.
Yes, because she's still taking part and some of the silliness, like when they went shopping and getting excited about buying that pretty bra. And
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess, yeah, that's true. But also, it's like, it's not so much like, I guess, her taking part in those activities that I found problematic. It's the fact that she, it's kind of, I'm worried, I guess, that the show's setting her up to be like, oh, we're kind of taking this progressive take on the whole wives and girlfriends theme because this lady is a successful lawyer, but they're not actually exploring that in any depth. But I recognize that that could be a premature judgment because I've only seen one episode, so that could change.
It could be a bit premature, yeah.
Yeah.
And let's face it, there have been footballers that have had wives that are lawyers.
Absolutely. But I guess it's not just about saying this woman is a lawyer. It's about looking at, okay, well, what does that actually mean? Like, what's going on with her, I guess. And I guess it'd be really interesting to see how the show progresses. I really wasn't impressed. I honestly found it quite boring and it just didn't captivate me at all. But I guess one thing I'm interested to see happen is how they progress that idea of the wives and girlfriends thing. Like, are they going to go into a whole, this WAGS idea is really problematic from a feminist perspective? And we could do something, the show could do something really interesting with that. But is that very optimistic of me?
I think it's probably very optimistic of you. I must say, I didn't feel inclined to, oh, I must make sure I get to watch that again next week.
Yeah. But surely the whole idea in this day and age that you could just do a WAG storyline is a bit dated. And then I felt like definitely the
But then, see, they've introduced the murder. I do not like the coach character. I think there's a whole lot of underlying stuff going on with him.
yeah. Well, that's why I got also I was thematically confused as well. Like I was like, oh, I like we're kind of laughing along with this silliness of these WAGs. And then someone's been murdered, and it just kind of was quite jolting. I don't know. I didn't feel like it really melded together that well.
No.
Yeah. So that sounds like it's a pretty much a thumbs down from both of us.
I'd say so.
Well, that's unfortunate. To be honest, when I first saw the ads for the show, I was quite excited by it. And I was thinking, oh, that'll be really interesting to have a watch of.
So, what excited you about the ads you saw?
Well, the ad really played with the comedy surrounding this girl from the country being introduced to this very glamorous life. And I don't know what it'd be interesting to go back and watch the ads again, but something about the way they did that seemed quite fresh and funny and interesting. I don't know. Now I say that, I'm thinking, why would that have seemed interesting? But it definitely kind of captivated me at the time. But yeah, after watching the first episode, I was just like, I could very much take or leave this as a show. Yeah. Anyway, the show is Playing for Keeps. It's showing on Wednesday nights at about 8:30 on Channel 10, or you can watch it for free on the 10 Play website. Just out of interest, Mum, when you were watching it on that 10 Play website, did you find the ads were coming up very frequently?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Okay, moving on. Listener feedback. So we told people that we would be finishing up the podcast for now, which basically we've decided that this episode is going to be our last episode for a while. We're going to take a break and see if we want to continue, and if we do want to continue, what we should be doing to make the show better or different. And a lot of people commented on Facebook or commented to me that they were really sad that the show was finishing and that how much they really enjoyed the show, which for me was obviously really nice to hear. And then also the fact that we got to 400 listens, which to me was really exciting as well.
I think so.
And another great accomplishment was that you told some of your friends about the show, so that made me even happier.
I know, that was quite bold of me, wasn't
Very bold.
it?
Here's me like 4 times a week posting on Facebook, "Hey guys, listen to my show." And you're like, "Oh, I actually told someone about it." So anyway, thank you for everyone who has been listening. We do really appreciate it.
We do.
We do. And if you just one more favor to ask, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, which I know most people are listening on Apple Podcasts because I can see that from the app that we record on. If you wouldn't mind giving us a rating and maybe even a review, it would be really, 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 really very much appreciated. But
Thank
that's,
you.
yes. Thank you in advance, should we say,
Yes,
just to put a bit of
yes.
extra pressure on. Okay, reading, watching, and listening to. Do you want me to go first or?
Well, I'll go first only
Okay.
because I didn't bring the book with me because it's a library book, but I didn't write down any detail. I know it's called The Thorn in the Flesh.
The thorn in the flesh.
Thorn in the Flesh.
Thorn in the flesh. Okay. Tell us a bit about it.
And it was written by a French guy who came to Australia in the 18 something or others and worked on different stations and everything and wrote this book, which really, when it comes down to it, really is about two families that are being this one woman felt abused or let down by this fellow. She ends up meeting someone else. He's on the other side of the fence on his property. And this woman is really, really upset that this man reject, well, he didn't even reject her, I don't think. I don't think he was even aware of the fact that she really cared for him because she worked with for him as a housekeeper for a while.
Okay.
And so this woman is so angry that she's doing things like ring barking old trees that have always been particularly special to this guy on his property. But it's sort of like I'm just trying to think the word to describe it. Not a fantasy thing, not a sort of historical, but like a Romeo and Juliet. What would you describe that as?
A love story.
Love story. It'll come to me. But I
Okay.
just thought it was really good that it was written in French for the French market by this French guy. And then translated relatively recently, I think, into English. And Helen Garner did the foreword for it.
Okay. Well,
She
you've
was
given
really
us an
good at it.
incredible lot of detail about the book. And
Yeah.
fortunately, I'm also able now to provide the author. So it's Paul Wenz.
That's it.
So
Yeah.
if people want to read The Thorn in the Flesh, thank
It's
you.
well worth a read.
Okay, great. What about watching or listening to?
Well, watching, I watched actually the other Saturday or Sunday morning, I watched some Rage. So that,
Oh, really?
yeah, satisfied my watching and listening to component.
Well, that's incredibly efficient of you, really, isn't it?
But I was just quite amazed. I forget, being older, a different generation, or whatever else. How different the music was.
Yeah.
And also, I had a sense of there wasn't much boppy color to it. The music, it was all slightly grunge, I
Can
suppose.
I ask you, are you referring, so obviously the music was all centered around a specific time frame. Are we talking 80s, 90s? Oh, now.
Now.
So, and it was lacking vibrancy or.
It just seems so different to me, but it was
Was it centered on a particular theme or was it just all current music?
Oh, see, I can't. Maybe it was a sort of theme that I wasn't familiar and it didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, maybe it was kind of a drab theme or something.
It might have been drab theme.
It's a very popular genre in this day and age, just kind of drab.
And it was sort of they had two fellows that were hosting the show, and so they were playing the music, and I've forgotten even which band they were from,
Right.
but they were hosting the show and they were playing the music that appeals to them.
Yeah. I have to say, this may be your vaguest reading, watching, listening to mention for the since the podcast started.
Yeah, well, that really, I'm really sorry. But the thing is, I am going on holidays and I am excited about the fact that I'm flying out of the country tomorrow.
It's totally fine, but I just want to make sure that you fully understand that I don't think you should be making any judgments about the state of current music based on this little segment of Rage that you watch, because we're not really aware whether there's a certain theme involved,
Yeah, and I
what was
didn't
really
watch
going
the
on.
entire show. And so, really, but the other day we watched on Spotify, and oh, golly, there was quite a lot of New Zealand music on.
You watched Spotify?
Oh, sorry, listened to
Right.
Spotify.
Right.
And fairly old New Zealand stuff, but golly, I enjoyed it. It was good.
So we're going, well, basically you can summarize for those from those two experiences. Current music, drab. New Zealand music, good. Yeah. Just let's, because it keep it simple, you know? Yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so for my watching, I got to see the Bell Shakespeare Company in Alice Springs.
Oh, wow. Yes, and you said you enjoyed it very much.
Yes, we saw Julius Caesar. It was really a fantastic production. I very much enjoyed it. It was the first time of seeing live theatre in Alice Springs for me. And I just was thinking, we're so lucky to have such a high quality theatre company come to Alice Springs. And the fact that we paid even less for the tickets than you would in a capital city.
Oh my God, you're joking.
Well, I think it must be subsidised.
Oh, I was just going to say they would have been subsidized to bring a
Yeah.
bit of different culture to the right, to the center.
Yeah, but we always get it. Like, we're really lucky. It's really overrepresented in terms of art and culture. So it was really cool. And basically, to summarize the plot, we have a political drama about a leadership struggle. So, a tale as old as time, you could say. So, I really enjoyed that. I'm actually listening. I just finished it today, actually, a true crime podcast. And so, yeah, so you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I don't actually listen to a lot of true crime podcasts, which is kind of crazy because that's where all the content is. There's so many true crime podcasts. And I was watching Australian Story on the ABC, and they had an episode called The Teacher's Wife, which was about the disappearance and potential murder of Lyn Dawson in the early 1980s. And it was about where the investigation is at now, and made a lot of reference to this podcast. And it's perfect for anyone who does a lot of driving or who just likes listening to podcasts all the time, because there's hours and hours and hours of content on there. And I personally am finding it a really captivating story. So the podcast is called Teacher's Pet.
But has it resolved? Have they reached a resolution yet? Have they found anything yet?
No, so the last episode, I was actually listening to it today on my drive, and they've basically resolved to, kind of similarly to us, stop the podcast for now. To see what developments arise, because they're basically waiting for the Department of Public Prosecutions to make a call about whether they're going to prosecute. So it's kind of at a bit of an impasse. It's a really captivating story. There's obviously, I don't think the podcast has been done particularly objectively, but I still think it's a really interesting story to follow. And as I said, there's just, I mean, there must be about 15 hours of content on that podcast. And I found it really interesting. And reading, I've kept up my reading,
Well
and
done.
I just finished a book called A Mouthful of Flies by Sue Curry. And Bella actually suggested it to me, and she actually got it from the library for me. And it's a diary of a remote area nurse who spent 6 months in a remote WA community and the struggles that she had. It was a single nurse posting and the struggles surrounding that. It was very interesting. Made me realize how lucky I was in my job that I kind of got to see life in remote communities, but didn't have anywhere near like the demands or the. I mean, she was just out there by herself and it was such a challenging role, and the management structure was just terrible. And what made it even more interesting was, so basically, she's taken the name of the specific community out of the book and she's changed everyone's names and changed all the references. So you can't, like, so it can't be identified what community it was. But it was really interesting. But because of the information she did provide in the book, I was able to narrow it down to like two different communities, which I've traveled to for work. So it made it even more interesting because each time she'd mention something, like either about geography or one of the features of the community, I'd be like, oh no, it can't be that one then. So I was kind of trying to narrow down where it was. But just a really interesting book. So that's A Mouthful of Flies by Sue Curry, and a super easy read as well.
Oh, good. I like.
Okay. You like an easy read?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so moving on. We're going to talk about aged care. So I don't think it's going to matter if you're prepared for this because I feel like you have a lot of opinions on it anyway, as do I. So basically, just to give a bit of context about why we're talking about aged care, so the federal government announced a Royal Commission into aged care quality and safety last week. Basically, it announced the Royal Commission on the eve of the ABC's Four Corners investigative report going to air. And basically, the ABC had an investigation into residential aged care, and the first episode of the Four Corners series, which was called Who Cares, aired last Sunday. So by the time people are listening to this, the second episode will have already gone to air as well. Anyway, so that's just to give a bit of a context around what's happening. So there's a Royal Commission that's been announced by Scott Morrison, and we're also currently watching this Four Corners investigative report on the ABC. First question to you before we go any further is, did you enjoy the Four Corners show, Who Cares? And would you recommend people watch it?
Yes, I would.
Okay. And well, I guess, did you want to share with me some thoughts that you had after watching the show?
Well, I've been thinking on and off about it for a while. Now, I worked in the area a long time ago, and things have definitely changed. Funding has definitely reduced. They're looking for cost-cutting ways to provide the service. But also, it occurred to me today, now we have become a society where it's acceptable that your aged people should be given care out of the home. And this could be because we have now become a society where the children are staying at home well in their 30s. So any space that there could have been to provide a comfortable place for an aged person has been taken up by the children. There's no
Okay.
space. Then there's also this thing that everybody, both people in a relationship, even, if there's a two people relationship or whatever, have to work to maintain this lifestyle that we've come to see is the norm and natural. And also because the aged care industry has grown into a money-making system.
Yes. I mean, I guess it's been allowed to grow into a money-making system because, well, there's money to be made in it.
And there's more and more aged
Age
people.
people.
And also, look, the fact of the matter is, people are living longer than they used to be able to. And they're not necessarily because they're living good and productive, independent lives, but that they can be kept alive so that they're able to breathe, pass urine and poop, but that's all. But they can be kept alive. I
Yes.
think we have to come to terms. It's a hard one because it's easy for me to say, but it is a hard one. But I think part of when someone does get admitted into an aged care facility, I think there has to be a conversation right then and there that this is a stepping stone to death.
Okay, yep.
You know, we can keep sending you to hospital. I mean, and blocking up the hospital system and then bringing you back here to wait till the next time you have a fall, you become dehydrated because you're not getting encouraged to drink enough, you become constipated, you get a nasty urinary tract infection, all those things.
Yes. Look, I think what you're saying is right. I completely agree with you, and I think it's comes down so much to our fundamental inability to talk about death and dying and to work having a good death into our conversations about having a good life because they're seen as so completely opposing ideas. And there's some kind of attachment to this idea of prolonging life as long as possible, rather than an emphasis on quality of life. I completely agree with you there. But I guess what the Four Corners episode was really looking at is the quality. I know it all comes back. I know what you're saying feeds into the fundamental issue. But I think there's another issue, which is okay, we can have that conversation. We can change the way we think about medical care when it comes to people later in life. But at the end of the day, if we are going to have people in residential aged care, there needs to be an emphasis on the quality and safety of that aged care.
And you see, then what's going to happen? It's the same with childcare. It's going to be more expensive.
Oh, well, absolutely. And I think that that's something that there just cannot be any doubt about, that any improvements that can happen as a result of this Royal Commission are going to cost money.
And the trouble with this Royal Commission, how long is it going to go on for?
Well, I don't know. And I think we should, it's actually really important to discuss that because, I mean, it's one of those interesting things because no one's ever going to say that having a Royal Commission into residential aged care is a bad thing. Who is going to say, oh no, we shouldn't do it? But at the same time, it's another example of Scott Morrison's political populism because he, as going back to our last episode, he's worried about the election. He's having to make politically popular policy announcements. But I think it's really important to note this came up. You know, just as soon as I Googled the Aged Care Royal Commission, we've had 20 aged care reviews since 1997.
Exactly.
So I feel like we have to recognize that while increasing public dialogue about this issue is never going to be a bad thing, the announcement of the Royal Commission itself is complete political populism, and it will be really interesting to see what actually changes as a result of it? Because I think we know what the issues are. And I think that's sometimes what can be really frustrating. Especially, I think with something like this, more so than other Royal Commissions we've had lately, is like, I think the issues are pretty clear. And I don't think, even watching the Four Corners show, which just to give let people know, it talks to staff that have worked in residential aged care or family that have had their family member in residential aged care.
Mm.
There was definitely nothing surprising there for me. And this is just from someone who hasn't worked in aged care, who hasn't really visited aged care. I wasn't shocked. I wasn't surprised at all by any of what they were saying. So I think there's a general knowledge of what the issues are. And I think that's kind of why something like a Royal Commission in this particular case is frustrating, because it's like, well, what are you actually investigating?
Yes.
What are you trying to find out?
Because, what you're trying to find out, what you've been constantly told, is that there are people with minimal, because, taking care of someone who's not able to provide, take care of themselves and needs assistance with basic human, care, it's not easy. Touching people, getting them, it's not easy. It's not something you can just do.
Yeah. But I also think that, yes, I completely agree with you, but I also think that something that does worry me about the way something like this Royal Commission is framed into quality and safety of care is that, like, for example, one example that was pointed to in the Four Corners show was saying, so the training that these people are receiving before they're working in these places is really insufficient. For example, they might only have a 2-hour lesson on dementia. And for me, what my alarm bells are ringing, and maybe I'm completely just naive, but my thought process is, I'd be really sad if so much of what I saw was fundamental that stood out to me in the Four Corners episode was just about people's having the time and the expectation that you really talk to and related to the people you are caring for. And for me, my alarm bell goes off in, I don't necessarily think that saying every staff member must have a compulsory PD on dementia once per year. Because I can imagine that being something that's kind of considered in a safety framework or a quality framework. I'm doing inverted commas here. We'll be saying, okay, well, everyone just has to have a PD once per year, dementia. So then they have more knowledge. Actually,
it's ticking boxes.
Yes. And how much does that, I understand having an understanding of dementia might be important, but I also think if you work in an aged care facility where you have senior staff, you have a range of different staff, and you have medical professionals that do have that in-depth knowledge, I think it could be okay to have carers there that didn't have a nuanced understanding of dementia, as long as the supervision is right and as long as there's an expectation that you care for people as if they're another human being. I think there's a lot more to that than having an expectation of technical understandings of all the different medical conditions that people might have.
Yeah, look, you definitely can do with a mix of staff, but you've got to have the mix of staff.
Yes, and I think that that's an issue. Sometimes the increase in the use of personal care assistants, or there's a number of different terms, but essentially non-nursing staff, often it's your, I think you commented on that when I talked to you about this earlier, you've got an increase in carers in relation to nurses. So you don't have that knowledge base in the residential aged care setting at all.
No. See, when I was working it towards the end, it was like you had the person in charge, you had ENs, and you had carers. You had the whole range.
Yes.
And they could work together. Yeah.
It's because it's about working together. Yeah. And I just, it's not about each person, I don't think, necessarily understanding everything.
No.
But it's about having people that can mentor other staff. And I think that just that baseline, and it's all about having more staff, but also that baseline expectation about how you're dealing with the residents. Because that's something that really stood out from the show, is just that lack of actual interaction.
Yes. Yeah.
But one thing that I just had to laugh, and I'm sure you probably noticed this as well. So one of the people that was on the show, speaking a lot actually, was the CEO from, it was called Leading Aged Services Australia.
Yeah.
I looked it up. So it's the peak body of residential aged care services in Australia. And the journalist was putting a lot of questions to him, kind of questioning a lot of what was seen as industry-wide policies, cost-cutting policies. And I love this line. Well, in a model that delivers person-centered care, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? People use person-centered care as if because that's in some of their policy documents, then everything's fine. Anyway, we have ranted and raved, and maybe some people just aren't interested, but I find it just really fascinating. I think there's so many issues wrapped up in that. Like, you've got the aging population, you've got the tendency, as you said, for people wanting people to go into residential care rather than be cared for by their family. Although that's something that's obviously been around for a while. Then combine that with the aging population, combine that with increased life expectancy, combine that with private industry trying to make money out of it. I think it just raises so many really interesting issues, but I'm very skeptical about what a Royal Commission is actually going to be able to achieve.
No, that mean they can come up with a beautiful document, is it? But that, yes, what will actually follow on from that? Given all the reviews that we've had.
Yes. Anyway, I think we should wrap it up, because we have gone on quite a bit longer than we should have.
Okay, then.
Thank you so much, for joining me, Mum.
Thank you so much.
Oh, just to reiterate to people, if people do want to watch that Four Corners show, it's available on iView, if you want to follow up about that. Anyway, sorry. Go, Mum. I cut you off.
Oh, that's okay, but just encourage people, and people should be encouraged too, that this conversation should start way before their parents are not considered completely clear and functioning. Having those discussions about, if it comes to the point that it's decided that an aged care facility may be the place where you would be better placed, to understand that it can't be seen as a place that's going to keep you alive forever, that you should allow and encourage and be comfortable with the fact that death is a very natural, normal part of life. And by denying that, it's not showing how much you love your old folk, but being bold enough to care for them enough to allow them a dignified and comfortable death. Because if you get them into a hospital, once they're through the door, it is the carer's role within that hospital to treat that person because that is what they're there for. So they will continue to treat these people.
So it's really about people being informed, empowered,
Yeah, and
and having discussions.
I'm not even talking about euthanasia or anything.
No.
I'm talking about allowing life to come to its natural end. Without the medical intervention, which will keep you breathing, which will keep you producing some urine, and if you're lucky, you might have a regular bowel motion.
I was going to say, this is a really somber note to end the podcast on, but I can hear the passion in your voice. So you're kind of saying it shouldn't be somber. It should be uplifting.
Well, it
It's
should be
about
uplifting, and also when. Remember to remember that when people do die, to keep moving forward and don't keep looking back.
okay. So we've officially gone like 10 minutes over time
Okay, darling.
discussing death.
Yes.
Anyway, I just want to say thank you so much for joining me on the podcast, and I so appreciate all your insights and for just being so patient with me and completely indulging me in my ambition to create a podcast. I just think you're amazing.
Well, thank you. Me too, you too. And I've enjoyed it.
And have a great time in Brooklyn.
Well, thank you. When I have my first coffee in Brooklyn, I'll be thinking of you.
And a bagel.
And a bagel.
Okay, bye.
Bye.